Welcome to Open for Discussion, a University of Sydney podcast looking at research through a personal and critical lens. I'm your host, Chris Neff. Joining me today is Dr. Michael Hare from the University's Faculty of Engineering and Information Technologies. Michael is an artificial intelligence aficionado, try saying that three times fast, and lecturer in complex systems. Thanks for joining us today, Mike, on Open for Discussion.
Great, thanks for having me here.
Can I ask first, what is artificial intelligence? And secondly, what got you into artificial intelligence? What was your background? How did you come to this?
Well, so artificial intelligence, that's a big definition. There's no straightforward answer in the sort of the general definition, but usually it's something that runs on a computer that's trying to do something kind of human-like, but perhaps not being very, very good at it.
Okay, good. Because my understanding is mostly a Star Trek, Star Wars, Will Smith movies, and other kind of...
Yeah, there's some great movies out there. And the movies out there, they portray a combination of robots and robots with some form of human-like intelligence. But what you see in the robots is a bit more like what we think of as human behavior and sort of expressing our human mind. You know? But that's not really what we're able to do at all with artificial intelligence yet. The real question, I guess, is when we worry about artificial intelligence, do we worry about being superhuman, or do we worry about them being super computational things? Like, we can have really intelligent humans. We've got massively intelligent humans. In fact, there's an awesome...
Yes, Mike. I'm often accused of being a super intelligent human, and I know the feeling.
It's confronting. It's isolating not to be understood, isn't it? The actual people with these very high... There's an Australian. There's a very famous... in mathematics circles, Australian, called Terence Tao. He's got an IQ of, they think, over 200. He's recognised as being one of the great IQ scores of all time. Massively intelligent character. Terence isn't going to take over the world.
No, that's you know? What I meant by it. That's what I... We were...
Well, so we have these human qualities that we think of. Then we have the what we actually have in computers. Mm-hmm. And in computers, it's really about fast tick-over processing, relatively simple algorithms, those sorts of things. And then what do we do with those?
So there's a difference between thinking about artificial intelligence relative to complex computations and thinking about it in terms of human behavior.
Absolutely. So this is actually gets us to how I got into artificial intelligence. I got a grant very early out of my PhD to work for the US military on how to put real psychology into a neural network. So how do you take an artificial neural network that is really common in computer science, and how do we do things which look much more like what humans do? And it turns out that's a spectacularly hard thing to do. And of course, we can only do it with very, very small problems. So you can do that, but only in very, very narrow ways. And it's a very specific thing in humans that we're trying to model there. What we don't know how to model is the whole brain and how those sorts of components interact. Mm-hmm.
So what's a good example of that? I mean, is it flying a jet? Is it you driving a truck? You know, I mean, is that kind of stuff?
What we wanted to know was how do humans do those sorts of things, right? So what the US military was really worried about, there were a couple of incidents that really worried the US military. One was called the Vincennes incident, which is where there was an enormous failure of communication on the command bridge of this missile ship, and it shot down a civilian aircraft. And there was so much going on, there was a great deal of confusion, and there wasn't any understanding about the decision-making processes that were going on the bridge that led to this failure. So they wanted to know how we made decisions and how we might be able to make it more effectively using artificial intelligence. So that was the goal. It turns out to be incredibly difficult. So for about 3 or 4 years, I worked on this particular problem of how do we start to understand the unconscious processes. How does your intuition inform the way you make decisions? And so you can do that. But only that very narrow thing. So that's possibly the most interesting thing that artificial intelligence can do for us long term. It gives us a way to look at the way in which we see ourselves to understand what we don't understand about ourselves.
And what would you say to people who say that AI or artificial intelligence is a threat?
I would say that what people are worried about are probably not the things that we should be worried about. So when we think about artificial intelligence, what we usually think about is a supercomputing brain that's sitting in the background that wants to take over the world. Whoa, that's a big call, right? So we can play with that idea. We can ask, what are they going to do when they get online? They're going to try and hack systems. They're going to try and take down, I don't know, the CIA. They're trying to get a hold of the nuclear codes and those sorts of things. Okay, that's what people do anyway. Like there are black hat hackers out there that try and do this all the time. So what are they going to do that we don't already do to ourselves? So the real question is not what would happen if we had these super intelligent AIs out there roaming around trying to take over the world. Our super intelligent humans don't seem to want to take over the world. Terrence Tao's not going to take over the world as far as
I know. No, in fact, some of the least intelligent humans appear to want to take over the world.
The point about AI is that they just run algorithms, simple computer algorithms, right? If you put them into a position where they do have access and you get them to move really fast, so fast that we can't stop them, then you're in trouble. I mean, that's where things could go wrong, right? But of course, we already do that. We have algorithms that run our trading algorithms on the share markets. The hypothesis at the moment is that they've caused flash crashes. There's one in 2010, there's one in 2013, and there's two in 2014 on the same day. And we don't really know what caused them.
There are some algorithms that are set up on the stock market for buying and selling. So yep. They're essentially, it's like bots.
Absolutely.
That are buying and selling based on, you know, large bits of data. But so you're saying that can lead to problems.
It leads to massive problems. Now, we wouldn't call them intelligent, right? These are just little bits of code ticking over really simple codes that do if-then-else type statements, right? That's not really what we think of as intelligence, but it's like a really primitive intelligence. But it's those statements, when they're miscoded by humans, that cause these flash crashes. And they run autonomously. We don't have direct control over them. They run so fast, we trade so fast these days, that they can run amok. Their algorithms are incorrect in some small way. They hook up with a whole bunch of other algorithms and they trigger a cascading failure in the market. There you go. You have $4.5 billion lost in the space of 15 minutes in one instance. That's what should worry you. The idea that AI is this huge supercomputing problematic thing that's going to take over the world. It is important they point out the potential dangers of any engineering technology. Mm-hmm. And scientists should take responsibility for that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just unfortunate that I think their angle is very focused when it could be much broader and could actually be perhaps more on target.
So we've got problems. We're just looking at the wrong ones.
Absolutely. And, you know, we need to manage these problems. It's the bits that we don't recognize. It's the unknown unknowns, right, that we really need to be far more actively trying to seek out.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud. You can find me on Twitter at Christopher Neff. So Mike, how does artificial intelligence design and development relate to the research work you do in complex systems?
So I'm interested in the way in which we make decisions. So what artificial intelligence gives us is a really clear way to start thinking about how we make decisions. So how do we put that into a computer? That sort of forces us to think really carefully about what we actually do. So yeah, there are some really clear things that psychology tells us about how we actually think and make decisions in complex situations. When we make decisions, what we do is we pick up on not just the overt signals that we see in our environment, but we pick up on the cues as well in the environment. And that changes the way in which we make decisions. So sometimes we pick up on the wrong cues and we make incorrect decisions. So my job in a very large chunk of my research is to do that for economics. So for me, artificial intelligence informs economics about how real people make real decisions in real economic situations.
So your point is about using artificial intelligence to make humans more efficient, not necessarily to make robots more efficient.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to know how we work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can find that out and we can put it into an AI, then we can put that AI into situations which are kind of like ours, economically speaking. In really complex situations, we can see how they behave. You know, so that's the idea.
Where would you locate this conversation about artificial intelligence and research and design in the broader conversation about, you know, whether it's the digital revolution or, you know, is this the next industrial revolution? What are we looking at, and how do we place this with what else is going on around us?
It's really hard to pick those technologies when you're in the middle of it. So if you're in the middle of the printing press revolution, would you have been able to say, well, the printing press is the thing? Well, there were other things going on at the same time. AI is definitely one of them. It's one of the front-running contenders, but there's other stuff going on at the moment. There's quantum computing, for example. Is it all about networks? Is it about the information networks? Or is it about the software running over those networks? One of these is going to win this battle. And so that's going to be the revolution in there. But we're right in the middle of it. I mean, we're in the heart of this battle, and it's really hard to see what the potential outcomes are, let alone which one's going to win.
So where do you see the greatest advantage for the application of AI?
The most immediate advantage to AI, and it's happening right now, is what it's doing for our ability to dig deep into data. And our own mental frameworks are relatively limited. And what we can use AI to do is help us reformulate all of that really intricate data in useful ways to try and understand our health, our economic well-being, our engineering directions, all of those things that are so hard for us to picture ourselves. That's where it's going to have the most significant impact. And that's really dumb stuff in terms of human intelligence. This is really data sorting, data aggregating, data filtering, all those sorts of things. So here's a great computer example. There's a computer called Watson. So Watson won Jeopardy, the American game show host, competition. It won against three champions. And what do you have to be able to do in order to win at Jeopardy against humans? You have to have this massive database of information that you have to infer the original question from the answer. That's actually a really non-trivial thing to try and do, right? So you've got to have something really fast that sorts through staggering amounts of detail in really clever ways and comes up with a probability of whether it's likely to be true or not. Now, it's not what humans actually do. Those three competitors that Watson was playing against were doing themselves something vastly different from what Watson was doing. This is not human-like computation in some sense. So that sort of artificial intelligence, we don't see any dark side to that sort of analysis. There's privacy issues and all sorts of things around sort of legal issues. And those are all really relevant. We need to be very careful of those. But in terms of the benefits that come out of the potential to do it, there's a lot of positivity there.
I understand you worked on developing an artificial intelligence related to the Chinese game Go.
Yeah, so one of the things about Go and chess and any of those really complex situations.
Can you tell us what Go is?
So Go is a ancient Chinese or Oriental game. So it's a board game, and the idea is to earn territory to beat your opponent in a more complex game than chess. So that's where part of the modern interest in artificial intelligence comes from. They are playing our most complex games far better than we are. So the question that we were asked was, how do we play Go when our ability to hold information in our conscious memory is so small? And we know how small it is. We can actually measure it. And it's tiny. In computer science, it's about 4 bits. It's nothing. But we make really complex decisions using much, much more information than what we actually are aware of. So how do we do that? How do we actually put that into an AI? Well, so you can do it by having a neural network which picks up on all the cues, not the entire board configuration, but just the statistically regular cues on the board. And then you combine that with local configurations, small chunks of things that we're actually consciously aware of. Once those two systems in our brains come together, that's how we make our decisions. So that's how we actually build those sorts of AIs. Or that's how we would if we were to actually build a human brain.
Can I ask if there's, you know, how does AI contribute to the inequality gap? Because whenever we think about making more efficient calculations about budgeting or economics, that usually translates into rich people getting richer and poor people getting poorer. You know, when
we would hope that it opens it up to being far more egalitarian, and perhaps I can illustrate that with an example. Okay, so in Australia, you've got a mineral extraction base. There's a limited number of spaces you can move into. If you've got a technological economy like Japan, there are other spaces you can move into. And the idea is that you want to move your economy in a direction that really grows the economy. And in principle, that should lift the whole base of the economy, right? So GDP correlates with overall health and those sorts of things, right? So with an AI, you could literally sort through all of the opportunities you've got to move your economy in the right direction. So if you're a policymaker in Central Africa and you wanted to start thinking about how to move your economy, you could start with an AI that could look at all the potential ways in which you could reconfigure your economy over the next 20 years. That's actually something you could do. And so that sort of poverty gap can help to be mediated or remediated by these technologies. And, you know, you can run them, because it's in the cloud, you can run them on a desktop PC.
Wow, so it's like a package of software?
Yeah, absolutely. Literally, you just need someone who knows how to run the software, and that's not terribly difficult. You need the political will, don't get me wrong, but that's obviously the human side. There's no reason why you couldn't do that in any economy.
So where do you think, Mike, the focus of attention should be on AI in the future?
I think the biggest benefits are already in play. So the engineering and the health side of those things, that's already being done. And that'll roll out over the next 20 to 50 years. And that'll have massive benefits for hopefully everyone. Cheaper resources, cheaper medicines, cheaper access to all sorts of technological results and those sorts of things. But that's already happening. And so that'll just play its own course. The real power of artificial intelligence is to try and understand how we can actually build these in ways that are in some sense a little bit more interestingly like us. Okay, how can we understand ourselves in the sort of reciprocal way? How can we understand our AIs to understand us?
Mike, each week I ask our guest what the relationship is between their research and sharks. And I've been waiting for this week. What's the relationship between sharks and artificial intelligence?
I think the relationship between sharks and AIs is that what we can do is manage fish stocks. And in particular, we know that sharks are top-level predators, and we know that they're enormously endangered. Like we wipe out hundreds of millions of sharks each year. So if we want to understand how our ecosystems are stabilized, how we can manage them better, the best thing we can do for sharks is apply artificial intelligences in the same way we talk about economics to the problem of managing our food and fish stocks to benefit of sharks.
That was a very polite answer to a potentially controversial question. So there's a whole industry within Hollywood that teaches us to fear artificial intelligence. And the string of movies is not stopping, it's expanding. Why do you think that is?
Because people love existential doubt. And you know, we're all in fear. And we're looking for things to... So it's the same thing with nuclear weapons, it's the same thing with biological agents. It's meteorite strikes. We love to play with the idea that we're all going to be wiped out by something. As curious as that is, and so that's what Hollywood feeds into. Whether it's real or not for artificial intelligence...
So this is an asteroid movie, basically, starring AI, is what you're saying.
Exactly. But in terms of AI, I think what people are really worried about is not actually so much what the practical reality of AI is. What they're probably most worried about is this vision of a world-dominating thing which can somehow control our lives. It's hard to imagine the actual practicalities of that. Like how would that actually roll out in practice in terms of what they have to get hold of, how they have to break security codes, how they have to control things? It's not clear. Humans aren't able to do that. And we're not clear if it's even theoretically possible to do that. So I don't know. I have my doubts.
Well, in the movies, they do it in 5 minutes. But I do appreciate your point that AI is about humans. It's not about robots. And if you were going to be concerned about the technology and the research and design around AI, it is around these, you know, the way that some of it can be used by humans, not by robots.
Absolutely. And on that point, they're meant to be efficient. They're there to make us efficient at doing something, right? And in doing so, they're faster than us. And so the problem is these very small pieces of code are so much faster than us that they run away from us very quickly. And so that's the real danger, that it's the speed in which these things react. They don't have to be intelligent. They just have to be faster and more connected.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us today, Mike.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.